With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. This is the Freeman Report on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello and welcome to today's Freeman Report. It is Friday the 19th of April 2024. My name is James Freeman and I've got another great show lined up for you today to finish off the week here on the Freeman Report. But before I talk about today's show, I'd like to talk about my interview on turbo cancers and the link with the mRNA jabs with Dr. William Makis on yesterday's show. That is now two world-leading oncologists I've had on the show confirming the existence of turbo cancers and the link with the mRNA jabs. When Professor Angus Dalgliesh was on the show recently, he spoke of the worrying rise of aggressive cancers in young people that we wouldn't normally expect to see in across countries with a high uptake of the COVID jabs. When I posted the interview on X, it went viral and has now been watched more than a million times across different social media platforms. Dr. William Makis, who was on the show yesterday, is also an expert. He's an expert in radiology, oncology, immunology, and has run one of North America's largest targeted radionuclide therapy cancer clinics. Dr. Makis on the show yesterday spoke about how the peer-reviewed literature on turbo cancers is growing, with six new papers published in journals in April alone and 26 papers now in total in the literature. Now, it was a great interview. Dr. Makis is another important voice, I think, now in this battle to get the mRNA jabs banned and for those who push them, knowing that they will do harm, to be held to account for their actions. And they will be. I posted the full interview on X this morning. And please, 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 I need all of your help to share the interview far and wide. Let's see if we can get another million views for this interview. I don't need to tell you all that how important this is, ladies and gentlemen. I'm relying on all of you to try and help. Please share the video on X, post it to any groups that you're on Telegram, WhatsApp or Signal. Because, you know, the advent of turbo cancers is another important piece and new piece of evidence of harm that these new experimental jabs are doing. And it is vital that we get this information out to the public, who a lot of them are already aware that something's up, that something is not right with these jabs. So it's really important now that we get this further information out there. So please go and share it while you're listening to today's show. And if you can't do that, please ensure that you do it later today. The other thing you'll be doing by doing that is helping TNT, because we are still growing as a station. And you can help us grow further by spreading this important message that the world needs to hear. Right, okay, back to today's show, because buried amongst all of the noise surrounding Iran and Israel this week is a story that has huge global significance and is a further piece of evidence highlighting the hypocrisy and lies from the United States government. Back in September 2022, somebody, who knows who, blew up the Nord Stream pipelines, ensuring that no Russian gas can be supplied to Europe. Now, for those who buy into the argument that CO2 is causing climate change, it is estimated that more than 115 tons of natural gas were released over the course of 6 days due to the blast, which is comparable to approximately 15 million tons of CO2. Now, the only reason I mentioned that is because the US administration, along with other Western governments, are telling their citizens that they must reduce CO2 and are pushing all sorts of punitive policies to try and force them into compliance. Now, if it were true that CO2 is indeed warming the climate, you wouldn't expect these governments to then go on and purposely cause environmental destruction that releases lots of CO2 into the atmosphere. You wouldn't expect them to do that, would you? And as well as releasing lots of natural gas into the atmosphere, whoever blew up the pipelines also ensured that Europe had to change the way it gets its natural gas. Instead of it being delivered by a pipeline, Europe started to ship gas from the US and pay a premium of up to four times the price, making the environmental and economic costs astronomical for European countries. So, who done it? Well, the Biden administration claimed that Russia blew up its own pipeline and in the process hurt itself economically, therefore totally ignoring the fact that the US gained financially from the disaster. I mean, Russia could have just turned the gas off, but no, we're supposed to believe that instead of just turning the gas pipes off, Putin decided to blow up his own pipelines. An assertion so ridiculous and unbelievable that it can only lead to one conclusion for anybody with an ounce of intelligence. And that conclusion is that the US was gaslighting us, excuse the pun. This was followed by claims in legacy media outlets like the Washington Post that it was a private Ukrainian team that done it, without approval from the US, another ridiculous assertion. Well, 2 days ago, the legal team representing high-powered insurers Lloyd's and Arch said that they have no obligation to pay out for the explosion because it was very likely carried out by a national government. Now, if this is correct, as many believe, including Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Seymour Hersh, then it was an act of war. An act of war committed by America, according to Hersh, who says he's got the evidence to prove it. So, to discuss all of this, I'm delighted that I'm going to be joined by managing editor of The Grey Zone, Wyatt Reed, who broke the story this week. So stay put where you are for this important discussion right after today's breaking news with Gemma Cooper in a moment. If you want to get in touch with me, please email me at jamesfreeman@tntradio.live. And whilst you're sharing that interview, that really important interview from yesterday that I post on X, please do give me a follow, James Freeman on X. I'm also on other social media platforms. And while you're at it, follow TNT Radio as well and help us spread the word of all the good work that TNT is doing. My name is James Freeman. This is the Freeman Report for today's News Talk TNT.
Going 360 on the headlines.
It's really well-balanced conversation.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, over to our UK news correspondent, Gemma Cooper. TFI Friday, Gemma, how you doing?
Yeah, TFI Friday indeed, yeah. No matter how much we love our jobs, it's always Friday, you can't wait, can you? Friday, you get the I've definitely got the Friday feeling today, I have to say. But I'm still here. I'm still casting my eagle eye across the headlines. There are a lot of political headlines today, it has to be said, for the end of the week. There's a lot going on. I mean, Rishi Sunak has made his landmark speech about cutting down on sick note Britain at the Centre for Social Justice in London, and he's just been accused within the last couple of hours of one of the leading disabled charities here in the UK of waging a full-on war against disabled people. They're absolutely appalled at some of the things that he's come out with and say they've already been inundated in the last couple of hours with worried people who get certain benefits, worried about they won't have enough money, benefits getting taken away. So that speech is going to have a lot of ramifications, I think. Also, the Centre for Social Justice, after he'd made that speech about welfare this morning, Sunak has also nodded ahead to the Rwanda bill, and he said that the MPs from the House of Commons and Lords who sit in the House of Lords will sit down on Monday and just keep voting and voting and discussing the Rwanda bill until it is passed. He's been quite dogmatic on that this morning. And staying with the Conservative Party activist who says she first reported the MP Mark Mingus to the Chief Whip when he allegedly phoned her at 3 o'clock in the morning, asking for thousands of pounds to get himself out of a hostage situation, it looks like, with bad people. She says she reported this straight away to the Conservative Party back in January. They promised an investigation. She says she's appalled by the Conservative Party's behaviour as an activist. She says they didn't look into it at all. They wanted it brushed under the carpet. She's broken her silence and said she's not going anywhere. They think she's a little 78-year-old woman. They've made a big mistake there. She says she's worked for the party for 40 years and she's given it her life. And she thinks she was just treated appallingly. So that's a bit of a blow also for the Tories here on Friday. They're just some of the headlines doing the rounds here on TNT at the top of this hour.
Dear, oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, me. Don't pick on a 70-year-old, 78-year-old little lady. They can be fierce. They've got nothing to lose. I think that's the wrong person to pick on. What a state of affairs, eh? Conservatives, again, trying to cover up some of the dastardly deeds that their MPs are doing, all blown up in their faces. It's not looking good for the Conservatives, is it? As time goes on, we just hear more and more of this. Although saying that, Labour's got its own problems as well, with Angela Rayner being investigated on multiple fronts. So it's not looking good, really, for red or blue side, really. And as you know, you all know here, if you watch TNT regularly, do not vote for red or blue or yellow, for that matter. Vote for any other colour, but those colours. The Rwanda bill, and be interesting to see if Rishi is able to push that through. If he actually sticks to his word, they could be there until the early hours trying to get that through, if it just ping-pongs to and from the House of Commons, from the Lords. And this thing on sick notes, Gemma, it's quite ironic, really. I mean, look, something's got to be done, because there are 2.8 million people now on long-term sick that are looking for jobs. That's not the total number of people that are sick, but the number of people out of work who would like to be, or able to be working, who would like to seek work but unable to because of long-term sickness. Really interesting, this, because, you know, it was the government themselves that locked people in their homes, that told people not to come to work for 9 months, that coerced and bullied people into getting an experimental new jab. 700,000 more people have joined that group of people on the sick since those jabs came out. And now the Prime Minister is talking about stopping doctors giving sick notes. I think it's absolutely ridiculous.
Well, he has acknowledged that, he said this, something's gone horribly wrong since the pandemic, were Sunak's words in his speech this morning. But I think we could all echo that. And we can tell him what has gone horribly wrong. I mean, obviously, people getting experimental injections is one reason. But of course, depression and anxiety makes up more than 50% of those who are on long-term sick since the pandemic. And the figures have jumped since the pandemic. And also, if you keep people off work too long, people get a taste of freedom, don't they? They don't necessarily want to go back into the system, which many people say is just a very sophisticated form of enslavement. Saying that this morning, he said we have a moral responsibility to, and the economy can't sustain it. Well, of course, you know, if you're not working, you're not paying taxes. This is what this is all tied up with. There's not enough money coming out of our pockets into the government's for them to go and fund things that we don't necessarily want. But there's Disabled Charity Scope, a big charity in the UK, said they've had many of their members and people that they help terrified that they'll get personal income protection payments cancelled, taken away, and that they'll struggle. There's a lot to unpack in this speech. It's definitely an election, kind of an election manifesto thing, I think, where he's hoping he'll get some votes from this. Whether he will, I don't know.
Interesting that he says, talks about a moral responsibility, because yesterday in the House of Commons, after a lot of dogged fighting by Andrew Bridgen to get that debate, we had a debate on the government's COVID-19 response and, of course, the excess deaths. And once again, I mean, this was a full debate in the House of Commons, supported by around 20 other MPs, co-sponsored. And again, we saw an empty House of Commons. How dare they? How dare they lecture people and bully people now that are potentially ill because of what they have done, and then none of them show up for the debate. Absolutely shame on you. I mean, I know they will be watching TNT. I'm sure on a Friday they'll be back at home, out for a long lunch somewhere, thinking about their next career move in politics. But shame on you. Shame on all of you who failed to show up yesterday to that really important debate, because let's face it, the COVID inquiry in the UK is just one big pantomime. It is a big joke. And the most, one of the most important sort of segments of that whole process, actually looking at the jabs and all of that, that was actually due to happen this summer. Of course, the government has taken that off and delayed it. Who knows when we'll see that, if not. So this debate that we had yesterday was really important. So shame on you if you're a British MP and you didn't show up to that debate yesterday.
But did you hear the cheers from the public gallery at the end? You know, yeah. and the look on the Deputy Madam Speaker's face said it all, didn't it? That the voice of the people was heard in the Houses of Parliament. It was deafening. It was absolutely amazing end to that debate. At least, you know, our voice was heard. The voice of the people echoed round the chamber because it was empty.
Yeah, I know, but still, I mean, look, I've actually spoken to people that have got mums and dads that have woken up in the last year. They now think they see what the government is doing. And you know, the thing that actually woke them up was these debates and, you know, these questions that Andrew Bridgen and others have been putting. And it wasn't the questions themselves. It was the fact that MPs don't turn up. And like, you know, whether you believe the jabs have caused harm or not, it is an incredibly important question, because if they have, right, then millions and millions of people were coerced to have them. So you'd think that the politicians would show up. And it's actually then the fact that we've had these empty House of Commons that has woken people up, because they're like, well, something must be going on, because this is an important question. Whether, you know, we need to get to the bottom of this. Either way, you know, MPs should be showing up to say this is a load of bollocks. This is not true. If that's the case, they should be showing up to this debate. And it's actually that thing which is waking people up. So maybe yesterday's video, I've seen lots of it on X, maybe that'll help wake up some more people to the fact that our MPs really don't give a toss about them and their health, of course. Right, Gemma, obviously you'll be back for the second hour of the show. To the rest of you, I've got a fantastic guest next. He is Wyatt Reed. He's the managing editor at The Grey Zone. We're going to be talking about that other really important bit of news this week about the Nord Stream pipelines and the fact that insurers are refusing to pay up because they're saying a national government was involved in actually blowing up the pipelines. So don't go anywhere. You can get a cup of tea. I'll give you permission for that, but nothing else. Don't go anywhere. Stay right where you are, right here on TNT.
TNT's Mark Morano.
Politico: German transport minister threatens, quote, indefinite driving bans on weekends to meet climate goals. Yay! Roll out the barrel. There you go. This is akin to Stalin's five-year plan, the Chinese agricultural revolution, so to speak. Where bureaucrats, usually mid-level, enforce these diktats from high-level bureaucrats and politicians from big summits like UN climate summits. And each sector of the economy has goals. And if you fail to meet them, drastic action may be necessary.
Mark Morano on today's News Talk, TNT.
In a democracy, the majority vote rules. But in most democracies, you can only vote for change every 3 or 4 years. To understand what people want, governments and political parties use focus groups. These focus groups can include as little as 20 people. Australia is a country of over 25 million people. Does making decisions based on 20 people sound fair to you? Have your say. Be heard in between elections. Download the For My Say app now. That is number 4, My Say.
Ladies and gentlemen,
today's News Talk.
News and information.
TNT Radio.
Right. Okay. Well, I'm absolutely delighted to be joined now by Wyatt Reed, who is managing editor at The Grey Zone. Welcome to the Freeman Report, Wyatt.
Thank you so much for having me.
Right. Now, Wyatt, we've seen some news this week, haven't we, about these insurers that are refusing to pay up for these blasts to the Nord Stream pipeline. But I wonder if you wouldn't mind just starting by recapping exactly what happened and what the US government, the UK government, what they were saying at the time.
That's right. Well, as you know, two of the biggest insurers in Britain, that's Lloyd's of London and Arches Insurance, are now saying that they have no obligation to honor their coverage of the Nord Stream pipelines, Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2, which obviously, as you know, were blown up in September 2022 in what has widely been described as kind of the largest act of eco-terrorism of all time, the largest act of industrial sabotage of all time. That attack has been blamed by the Russians on the United States, the United Kingdom. The West says that this was really just a group of rogue Ukrainians, which makes this defense by Lloyd's of London and Arches Insurance that much more interesting. They are saying that they are not paying because, and here's a direct quote from their legal brief, defendants will rely inter alia on the fact that the explosion damage could only have, or at least was more likely than not to have, been inflicted by or under the order of a government, which is to say that they are arguing that since this action was carried out by a government, it is not covered under their insurance policy. Now, this is a far cry from what we've heard from Western media outlets who have, as I noted, tried to pin the blame on a quote-unquote team of rogue Ukrainian operatives. This was an operation that is claimed to have taken place without the knowledge of Vladimir Zelensky, the Ukrainian president. It's supposed to have taken place kind of off the books, perhaps under the direction of Budanov, of kind of the intelligence director, or of General Zaluzhny at the time. The fact that Lloyd's of London, obviously a massive, massive insurer that's incredibly well connected with the UK banking establishment, is stating in court as their defense that this was caused by another government, that's a significant step. It makes you think that perhaps there is a little bit more that the British government understands than what it's letting on publicly.
Yes, exactly. Now, at the time, I know that the Western outlets and the US and whatnot are blaming it on a private Ukrainian firm at the moment. But at the time, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Western governments and politicians were trying to pin the blame on Putin himself, weren't they?
That's right. At the very beginning, the suggestion was that the Russians blew up their own pipeline, that they were so difficult and intransigent and impossible to deal with that they would blow up their own pipeline. And how do you deal with someone like that, obviously, is the implication, right?
Right, Wyatt. I mean, do you think they were trying to gaslight us? Excuse the pun.
I think that is a one way to put it, for sure.
Wyatt, let's talk about the consequence of this. Obviously, there is, it released a lot of natural gas into the environment. I'm not one for believing that CO2 is actually warming the climate, but you know, our governments are telling us that. And I think it was something like 115 million tons equivalent of CO2 that was released. So there's that. But there was also economic fallout, wasn't there? Because suddenly Europe, they've got to get their gas. So they had to get it from the US. Tell us all about what some of the fallout of those pipes being blown up.
Well, I don't have to tell Europeans about it. They're living it, right? They are living through a slow deindustrialization brought about by this kind of double whammy here. This dual factor between the fact that they're pipeline that was funneling all this cheap and relatively clean gas from Russia was blown up, as Victoria Nuland and as Joe Biden threatened would happen. That they are also dealing with the fact that they are cutting themselves off from Russia from all gas, right? Not just through that pipeline, but they're sanctioning Russia and they're cutting themselves off, preventing their member states the EU from importing any Russian gas. And so they're going to have to buy that gas from somewhere. It's coming from the United States. It's coming on boats. It's not coming through a pipeline. It's far costlier. It's far less efficient. So this has had a huge, huge negative impact to economic activity. In Europe, you can see in countries like Germany, I mean, massive shutdowns, huge layoffs. Just yesterday, we saw the news, I think 20,000 people, I forget exactly which factory off the top of my head, but it's just going to be more and more of this as this continues to decline, as Europe continues to refuse to help itself, as it is stuck under kind of the boot heel of Uncle Sam, of leadership class that feels more loyalty to Washington than to their own people. They don't have a whole lot going for them.
Now, Wyatt, I'm sure you're aware of Seymour Hersh and all of his articles that he's written, all the research that he's published. He is claiming that United States government did this. What are your thoughts on that conclusion?
Well, I don't want to get too far into the weeds here, but I am fairly convinced that if the United States or the United Kingdom did not directly carry this operation out, that they were certainly very much involved in the planning stages of it. And I would extend that even to far more of the activities than we're told publicly. I mean, the fact of the matter is the United States does have incredible intelligence capabilities to this day. And it's publicly stated, you know, in the months beforehand, they stated that they had knowledge, they had foreknowledge of the Nord Stream attacks. In the days before the attack on the Crocus Music Center in Russia, we were told they have foreknowledge of all these events. It's a bit suspicious. It really is. You know, there's a fine line between having knowledge of something and being able to stop it. And I think with Western intelligence services, they fall on the side of the latter far more frequently than they tell us.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, Biden himself, didn't he? He said that we will, I forget his exact words, but it was something along the lines, we will not let this pipeline go ahead. We will not let this
happen. There will be no Nord Stream.
Yes, that's the one. That's the words. So, and then, hey, presto, it blows up. Wyatt, we're going to take a short break now. Don't go anywhere, because I'd like to talk to you about wider kind of strategic, the geopolitics of the Ukraine war and also the Middle East. So don't go anywhere. Stay right where you are, right here on the Freeman Report on TNT.
I have some even more exciting news.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boyland here with your TNT headlines. Israel has launched a limited strike against Iran in response to its retaliatory airstrikes over the weekend. The Bank of America is warning a direct war between Israel and Iran could send oil prices soaring to $130 a barrel. Over 100 university students protesting Israel's war in Gaza have been arrested in dramatic scenes at a campus in New York. And South America's Argentina has applied to become a new global partner of NATO.
Why not give TNT Radio a follow? We're on all major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time right here on today's News Talk.
TNT Radio.
TNT Radio.
Right, now Wyatt, as with all of these things, you know, we're told these wars are about one thing, but actually once you zoom out into the big picture and you start looking at the geopolitics of all this, it poses lots of questions. And I don't want to go down rabbit holes and say that, conclude that we know things are going on. But for example, we've got this conflict in the Middle East. It's a bit curious how Hamas was able to launch such a huge attack on so many different points and break so many different points of the wall. We also know that there are huge gas fields off of Gaza that belong to the Palestinians, millions of cubic feet of gas there. We also know that the Israelis want to build a canal to rival the Suez Canal, and Europe needs gas. Well, without kind of saying that, you know, That's what they're up to. But what do you make of all of these conflicts going on at the moment? Because it's no secret, I think, that America, one of its biggest fears is a strong industrial Germany getting a rich energy, partnering with a rich energy Russia. So there are other things at play. What are your thoughts about the big picture in terms of geopolitics at the moment?
Yeah, well, certainly that's the long-term plan of U.S. strategic, quote-unquote, thinkers, is keep the Russians down, right? Germans down, Russians out, and Americans in, right? So whether that looks like what we're talking about with the resources here, obviously when they shut off the Western access to Russian gas, this is one of the largest producers, if not the largest producer in the world, they have to get gas from somewhere, right? So you immediately saw pivots in the Western establishment at the after February 24th happens. You immediately see the United States run in search of gas to the Venezuelans, right? The feared Venezuelans. It happened within weeks, within a couple months. They were having backroom negotiations with evil Maduro to try to get that gas that they had been keeping off the market for so long, for humanitarian reasons, obviously, right? Quote unquote. Now we see a similar situation. Why not take advantage, of a perfectly good genocide in Gaza? So I just saw a new report this morning that Tel Aviv has given 12 licenses for gas exploration off the Gaza coast so far in the past 6 months during this war on Gaza. So they're taking the advantage of the situation as good Westerners should by, killing people on the one hand and taking their stuff on the other. That seems to be kind of the modus operandi of whether that be the United States or Israel, its partner in crime in the Middle East. That's always on the back burner, I think, for the people in charge.
Yeah, it is funny, isn't it, why that all of these, wars and conflicts that the US really, really wants everyone to focus on for whatever reason. It always seems to involve countries that have got lots of stuff that America wants to get its hands on. It's a funny coincidence that.
And no nukes now, to defend them.
Yes, yes, exactly. Now, Wyatt, we've got the presidential elections coming up this year. Give me your assessment on how you think this could change the geopolitics, if at all, that we're seeing around the world at the moment.
Well, it's difficult to say exactly what will happen. I certainly think that a Trump presidency, from the perspective of people who are interested in seeing normalized relations with Russia, I can see that that would probably be more likely to happen under Donald Trump than under the current president, Joe Biden. In terms of things with Israel, it's difficult to say. In terms of, to what extent Donald Trump would actually put, hit the brakes on what Israel is doing right now, I'm not entirely convinced on that count. I will say I was not the biggest fan of a number of people who he staffed his administration with, people like John Bolton, people like Mike Pompeo, people like Jared Kushner, who ended up running his Middle East foreign policy effectively. If certain people are to be believed, personally ordering, for example, the strike on Qasem Soleimani, on this top Iranian general, who's basically could be credited with almost single-handedly destroying ISIS, just an incredibly important figure for the Iranians. If Trump comes into office and he hands over his foreign policy to those kinds of people, well, then we're not going to see a very big difference in terms of how the United States acts on the global stage. If he actually embraces a kind of America first mentality, that means propping up our own economy. That means not investing all of our time and resources into wars of adventure and wars of choice in people that in countries that do not want us there at all, then I think we're going to end up with something, you know, like very much like what we have right now, which would be a shame.
Yeah. And do you think, because I think, you know, Trump has made clear, and I don't think there's any reason why that will change, but he said that the war, the proxy war with Russia will end within 24 hours of him becoming president. But of course, we've got China then. So what do you think Trump will do on China? Do you think this is just going to be a case of, right, we're going to put that conflict to bed there. We've got rid of loads of old American munitions. We've restocked. Now we're going to focus on Taiwan and China. Do you think that's what we're going to see?
Well, I think I'm a pragmatist. I'm a bit of a pessimist. I think we are more likely than not to see increased tensions with China if we are going to see a Republican administration of any kind. Unfortunately, I just think that's kind of the trade-off that you get. We're not really allowed to have what we actually want. We can have war with Russia or war with China, but if you want no wars, unfortunately, there's no real party to vote for that's anti-war in the United States. I would like to see normalization with all countries. I think that's really the only rational solution for America future in the future is to make peace with the fact that we are a decaying empire, and instead of lashing out and burning all our bridges and trying to start three wars at once, coming to grips with that and, you know, looking inwards, developing our own economy and taking advantage of the rest of the world. I think that's really the only rational way out for the United States. But you're right. We are definitely, you know, even if Trump is able to kind of simmer tensions with Russia, I think it will be kind of at the expense of tensions elsewhere in the world. I would like to think I'm wrong. I'd like to think that he kind of learned his lesson from the first administration, that he learned his lesson from injecting his administration with all of these neocons and kind of blob figures from the deep state that have no home, they really have no loyalty to the United States, only or even to themselves. These people, you know, if they come back in the administration, then that's who's going to end up pushing his foreign policy towards conflict, whether that be with Russia, which they did. You know, they continued to do that during his administration, even though the media didn't report on it. Or that be China, or that be Iran. You have to have true American patriots in the sense of, you know, they want what's best for America. Otherwise, you're just going to end up with more of the same.
Yeah, and of course, we have run out of time now, so we'll have to get you back on at some point, Wyatt, if you're happy to come back on. And of course, the background to all of this is the American dollar, the American economy, and when you put all together what is going on at the moment, America and the economy is potentially in trouble going forward as other countries potentially stop using the dollar to trade commodities around the world. And that potentially is the reason why we're seeing all of this war, these wars and conflicts around the world, because it is one way that America gets out of its domestic problems with its economy. Wyatt, thank you so much for joining me on the Freeman Report. Of course, you are the managing editor at the Grey Zone. So I'd encourage anybody to get over there now and have a look at some of your articles. Please do come back as well. Wyatt Reed, ladies and gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you.
Right. OK, we're going to take a short break now. And when we come back, I've got a lovely lady. She's called Nicola Lund. She is a writer for the Conservative Woman. We're going to be all talking all about these bloody clean air policies that the Welsh government want to bring in. I was in Bath in the UK last night. I parked in a car park, and get this. You know, my car is parked, engines turned off, not moving anywhere. But the car park and the Bath Council decide to charge you more depending on what type of car and the emissions you get. Absolutely bonkers. And it's coming to the city near you. So we're going to be talking all about that in just a moment right here on TNT.
People might tell you that Lyme doesn't kill people, but we are losing people. People disappear from their lives.
One of the scariest things that I had to deal with was memory loss. Not just like I don't remember what I did last week, but like I forgot all the words to my own songs. I remember going to my primary care physician and he was like, you are 100% healthy. There's nothing wrong with you. And my response was, that's impossible. I'm dying.
I wasn't working. So I had all of these hospital bills. We had to move out of our home and move into my parents' basement.
I just wish I could have truly been present in those big moments, you know, when she took her first steps or, you know, her first day of preschool. Lyme is such a thief and it goes undetected because no one is looking for it.
For more information and prevention tips, go to projectlyme.org.
You are loved. You are valued. You are resilient. You got this.
You're there for them. We're here for you. Find free care guides at aarp.org/caregiving.
You're with James Freeman and the Freeman Report on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right now, these clean air policies really do get my goat. Just because of the way that they're implemented. I was in Bath last night. They've got a clean air zone there. So you pay to drive into the city. You can argue maybe that's a good thing. Stop polluting vehicles coming in and ruining the air. But once you're there, you go and park your car in a car park and you get paid more for parking your car, turning the engine off, if it's more pollution, it puts out more emissions. I think it's absolutely bonkers. And so I'm delighted now to be joined by Nicola Lund, who's going to tell us what the Welsh government are up to, aren't you, Nicola?
Yes, and I'll start by saying I started looking into Welsh government and their policies 4 years ago when I could see that the government restrictions in response to COVID were lending themselves very conveniently to the net zero agenda, basically. And yes, I've got an article out today which is about the air pollution issue, because Welsh government have published a clean air strategy. They intend to publish a Clean Air Act, and I think they're being very disingenuous because it's basically focusing, as the ULEZ has in London and around the UK, on air pollution outdoors and obviously the war on the motorist, when you actually look into it, we suffer from more sort of adverse effects of air pollution from just being indoors, where, you know, people spend most of their lives. You know, there's things like volatile organic compounds, particulate matter from pet dander and vaping and all sorts. And they're not telling us about this at all. You know, Public Health Wales actually refer to only exclusively to outdoor air pollution and not indoor.
Yeah, and I mean, look, Wales is it's probably one of the greeniest areas in the UK in terms of the percentage of the country which is covered by open countryside and forests and whatnot. So how much of a problem have we got, do you think, in terms of air quality in Wales?
Well, obviously I'm no expert, but, you know, having looked into Welsh government, Wales was the first country, or the Welsh government was the first government in the world to declare a climate emergency. And they have vowed, Mark Drakeford vowed when he was first minister, to put climate at the heart of everything that they do, you know, and they've enshrined it in law in the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act. And, you know, I don't know what sort of science they're following, but when you look at their publications, for example, Annex 5 of the Carbon Budget 2, it states that it's based on modelling, basically. So, you know, it's not exactly settled science, I would say.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, one of the things that strikes me is you'll know from living in Wales that back in, I think it was 1990, there was this consultation started on the M4 road into Wales, because it's awful. It's an awful bit of motorway. It ends up being congested all the time. And not only that, it is, you know, the main road into the sort of the heart of the economy of Wales, because a large proportion of the people in Wales live in southeast Wales. And, you know, this consultation went on for years. I think in the end, they spent around £150 million. They bought up land, which can't be sold on because it's marshland, paid huge amounts of money for this land, even though it's actually worthless now. Like I said, they can't sell it on. And then they called this climate emergency and said, well, no, we're not going to do any work on any roads now. But Nicola, when you drive, and I don't know how often you drive in and out because you're right on the west coast of Wales, but when you drive in and out, you end up with big miles and miles of queues of cars stopping, starting, putting huge amount of emissions into. So, I mean, my point is, I don't think there's anything wrong with trying to clean the air up in cities, but it just seems to be that whatever the Welsh government do, it's just incompetence written all over it. What are your thoughts? I mean, things like the 20 mile an hour speed limit, for example.
Yes, well, they brought that in under the guise of safety. But if you look at the transport strategy, as I have, it's not about safety. Again, it's about the climate. And they've actually stated in this publication and others that they want modal shift away from private vehicle use. So they have a planning hierarchy, the transport planning hierarchy, where they have walking and cycling, which is active travel, at the top, followed by public transport underneath, and then right at the bottom, private vehicles and, you know, the diesel and petrol vehicles, basically, right at the bottom, electric vehicles.
Yeah, so what I'm expecting, I mean, I did glance over the report this morning and had a look at the different things. And you got things like clean air zones, smoke controlled areas. They talk a lot about domestic combustion. I must admit, I'm really worried about that. I've got a lovely wood burner, which I'd use. I don't use my central heating. I just put that on. I'm worried they're going to come for that. And so I think it's clear that we're going to see things like, you know, in Cardiff, in Newport and Swansea, we're going to see these, you know, charging people to come in. They're going to try and get people out of their cars. But Nicola, you'll know very, very well. Tell the viewers, what is the public transport system like in Wales? The alternative?
Yes, exactly. It's hopeless. You know, I'm not averse to using public transport and walking, but if there's no infrastructure there, I just don't see how they can expect us to be walking and cycling and using public transport more, you know. And they have as well stated that they expect to see clean air zones established in towns and cities throughout Wales to reduce the impact of transport emissions on health. And it says some of these may be supported by a charging element. So that you know, this will come in. But as I said, they're not giving us any information about the hazards that are in the home, you know, and when there's so many children and, well, people with COPD, children with rising cases of asthma, et cetera. It's completely disingenuous as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, so your point is actually, you know, they could improve health a lot more by making changes to people's houses. What kind of changes do you think that they could do which would actually have an impact then?
Well, they've put a very small section in the clean air strategy about, you know, raising awareness of air pollution as evidence sort of arises. But, you know, they're not, you know, as far as I'm concerned, they're not interested in health.
Yeah, but Nicola, you're what you're saying, I think, is that actually, you know, the Welsh government, all of its focus is on the air quality outside, when actually a lot more health impacts are from the air quality inside houses. So what kind of things, I mean, if you were in government, for example, How would you go about tackling the pollution and air particles within people's houses?
Well, they certainly need to you know, spend money on advertising, and that's all you're seeing at the moment on social media is climate, you know, adverts about the climate, and they don't seem to be putting any sort of information out there about protecting our health in the home and wherever else, you know.
Yeah, because one of the things, you know, if you live in Wales, a lot of the houses here, certainly my area anyway, they were built, you know, a couple of hundred years ago. They haven't got great, you know, they're not that great sort of well ventilated, the heating systems. So maybe the government, I think what you're saying is the government should be putting money into improving people's houses, maybe, and actually that would have a bigger effect than all of these clean air zones and things.
Yes, I mean, you do hear about sort of they do try and raise awareness about mold and things and the dangers of mold in people's homes. But another thing is they do want us all to decarbonize our homes by 2050. So that'll be getting rid of it all fossil fuel powered, you know, sources of heat, you know, oil.
Now I did see in the report from the Welsh Government that they plan to hold a consultation on this. And of course, we've seen Sadiq Khan hold a consultation in London, which he then didn't take any notice of at all. Do you know when the Welsh Government is going to go out with that consultation?
I don't. But with these consultations, it's important to note that, you know, they ask a very small amount of people. Generally, it's usually about 1,000 people per consultation when Wales has got a population of 3 million. And I'm very sceptical as to who they ask as well, because when they brought in the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act back in 2015, the year before they had a national conversation, they called it, consultation, where they were asking the Welsh population, apparently, what their major concerns were. And number one in that list of concerns was climate change, believe it or not.
Yeah.
You know, you wonder who they are asking, because this was above crime and violence, education, health, housing, employment. You know, climate change was number one. And of course, that was the focus of the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act.
Now, Nicola, I'm really pleased that you are writing. You've written this article in The Conservative Woman. You've got your own Substack as well. And we'll, in a moment, we'll give people the link for that so they can go and read your articles. Because I think it's really important to highlight what the Welsh Government is planning for Wales. Because I don't know about you, but one of the things that concerns me with in Wales is that, you know, this 20 mile an hour thing, that was actually in the Welsh Labour manifesto before the last election. They told us they were going to do it. And then we've seen more people sign the petition against it than actually voted for the Labour Party at the Welsh Labour elections. And the point I'm trying to make is, in Wales, generally, around 45 to 47% of the population turn out to vote in these elections. So I think the message there is, look, you know, if you're watching this and you go and read Nicola's articles, if you're worried about this in Wales, whether you live in Cardiff, Newport, Swansea or wherever, and you don't want to be charged for using your car and you don't agree with these net zero policies, then go out and vote. What are your thoughts on this, Nicola?
Yes, I know that. I mean, a lot of people are getting disillusioned with the voting. I mean, I'm personally of the opinion that I'm getting very despondent now, and I don't really know what we can be achieved. But people certainly need to take more of an interest in what's going on and in current affairs. And my Substack page, I don't do it for any, you know, financial gain. It's completely free. I'd like people just maybe to take a look at it and share the stuff, because they need to be aware of what is coming, because they have already stated that in the next 10 years, we need to make more progress regarding the climate than we have in the last 30 years. So this is all about orchestrating huge behaviour change. And we've even got a behavioural science unit now established in the what the IHCC it's called. It's called the International Health Coordination Centre, which is a collaboration between Public Health Wales and the World Health Organization.
And Nico, can I ask a favour? I think it's really important what the work that you're doing to highlight to people what's going on. But I think, look, you know, in terms of, well, so what? What are people supposed to do? Well, I think the message is we've got another election coming up in Wales. I think it's in 2025 or 2026. At some point, it'll be 2025, I think, is the next election. If you're reading my article, this is what you should be putting at the end. If you're reading my article and you're concerned about this, make sure you go out and vote. Because yeah, when you've got a 45%, 47% turnout, we only need, you know, 5%, 10% could change the whole, you know, the turnout or the result of the election. So, Nicola, when you write your next article, please do let people know that that is something they can do and something they should be doing in Wales if they're concerned about what they're reading. Yeah. Nicola, where do people go to read your articles?
Right. Well, I've written for the Conservative Woman and the Free Wales articles there. Substack page and UK Column News as well.
And that's Nicola Lund, if they type that in. Fantastic. Nicola, thank you for what you're doing. Keep on writing those articles. And like I said, tell people what to do if they're concerned about it. Go out and vote in 2025 and let's change the outlook for Wales. Thank you very much, Nicola. Have a great day.
Thank you, James.
Right, okay, it's Friday, but it's not over yet. I've got another hour left on the Freeman Report, so go make yourself a brew. I've got a fantastic second hour for you, and I'll be right back right here on TNT in just a moment.